Our next case is 2018-1233-1479. Counsel here. Is counsel here on this case?
Yes, Your Honor. On the
you want to take your place?
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you.
Michael Moore, conservator of the person in the estate of Justin T. Moore versus Mount Carmel East Health System, doing business as Mount Carmel St. Anne's Hospital et al. For the appellant, Mr. Seckler.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Chief Justice O'Connor, justices of the court, and may it please the court, my name is Joel Seckler. I'm an attorney with Carpenter, Lips, and Leland here in Columbus, and I'm proud to represent both Central Ohio Anesthesia, Inc. and Dr. Herrick Humphreys, MD, in this case. Counsel for the other appellee in the case, Mount Carmel St. Anne's, Mr. Schaefer, is here. We have agreed to split our 15 minutes assigned to the appellant. I will take 12 minutes, Mr. Schaefer will take three, and may it please the court, I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
2 minutes out of your 12, I'm presuming?
2 minutes out of my 12.
All right.
Yes,
proceed.
Chief Justice. The certified conflict question that we're here before the court on has been divided into two subparts. And the first part of that certified conflict question is, does the Ohio Savings Statute apply to an action in which a plaintiff attempts but fails to perfect service on the original complaint within 1 year pursuant to Civil Rule 3A? And we respectfully submit the answer to this portion of the certified question is no. And that's because the failure to commence an action, the failure to serve the defendant within 1 year and commence the action, means that no case ever existed as a matter of law. And as such, there could be no failure otherwise than on the merits of that action. And otherwise on the merits failure is an express prerequisite to the savings statute being able to be utilized and the savings statute being able to be applied. Now, I think it's important to know that in Ohio, commencement of an action is defined in a specific way, and it's different than it's defined by the federal courts. In the federal courts, an action is commenced simply by filing the complaint. In Ohio, it's different. We have a different system. The General Assembly has made a choice that we are to have a different system. And that system is, under 230503, 230501.7, that an action is commenced by filing the complaint before the statute of limitations expires if service is perfected on the defendant within 1 year. So commencement does not mean just simply filing. Commencement means filing coupled with service on that defendant within 1 year. If those two things do not happen, and the statute of limitations expires in the interim period, no case has been commenced against that defendant prior to the statute of limitations expiring.
Counsel, why does that matter? I mean, if we're looking at the Ohio Savings Statute, the statute refers to in any action that is commenced or attempted to be commenced. So why does commencement matter if what we're looking for is an attempt?
No, and thank you, Your Honor. And here is why it matters. And this goes back to this court's decision in Cuthus versus Bear in 1954. And that case is still good law. It has not been overruled. It has not been addressed by this court in a while, and I think that may be part of the problem. I think this is an important case that has gotten lost in the shuffle. And that case involved the savings statute and the commencement statutes. And in that case, that was back at a time when, for purposes of commencing a lawsuit, you had to file the lawsuit before the statute of limitations expired, have the summons issued before the statute of limitations expired, and then as long as you were diligent in your efforts to serve, you then had 60 days to get service on the defendant, and if you did so, that service related back to when you filed the lawsuit before the statute of limitations expired. And in Kossuth, just like the plaintiff in this case, the lawsuit was filed before the statute of limitations expired, but service was not perfected on the defendant within the requisite time period. At that time, it was 60 days. Here, it's 1 year. And the plaintiff then argued that they could, when the court dismissed the case for failure of service, the plaintiff in Kossuth argued that that was a failure otherwise than on the merits. And it went all the way up to this court, and this court disagreed. And the court disagreed for this very reason, and I quote, "It is common knowledge that after service of summons and even after the filing of an answer, a case may be dismissed for want of prosecution or otherwise. Such would be a genuine dismissal because such case would be pending and the court would have jurisdiction over it. It seems axiomatic that a non-existent case cannot be dismissed. In the present instance, for lack of service, no case came into existence in Lorain County," the county where it was filed. "Therefore, as to the complaint filed in Lorain County, we hold that the plaintiff did not fail otherwise than upon the merits. The plaintiff simply never had a pending case in Lorain County." And so, Justice French, hope I didn't take too long to get back to answering your question, but the decision in Kossuth, to me, answers your question as to why this is important. Because in this case, if the plaintiff, Mr. Moore, did not obtain service on Dr. Humphreys within 1 year of filing the lawsuit, which there's no dispute plaintiff didn't. Plaintiff concedes that. Appellee concedes that. Then under the law as stated by this court in Kossuth, it is as if no complaint was ever filed against Dr. Humphreys by plaintiff. And so either one of two things are true in applying Kossuth to this case. Either one, the 366th day after the complaint was filed, then that's an on the merits with prejudice judgment in favor of my client because the statute of limitations has passed. Or
counsel, the doctor in this case, the service was attempted at the place where he reasonably would have been served had he been working at that location. He had retired. So if we go down the road that you're advocating for, the plaintiff would have to further investigate and make that determination that he had retired and find out where his new location was?
Well, and Justice Donnelly, I think it's at some level, I think that burden is on the plaintiff as the plaintiff. I mean, under the way the civil rules work in Ohio, the burden is on the plaintiff to obtain service on the defendant through the mechanism set forth in Rule 4. And so that burden is on them inherently to make sure they have the right address and they make sure they perfect service within the timeline and within the manner that's required. And I note in this case, not only is it the plaintiff's burden, but the plaintiff was aware they had a service issue from the beginning. I mean, within less than a month of filing the complaint, the clerk filed a notice in the docket that said that as to Dr. Humphreys, the attempt to serve him was returned to sender, not at this address. So they knew within 40 days of filing this lawsuit that they didn't have good service on him. And then it was up to them, either through independent investigation, through the service of interrogatories or requests for admissions, to determine what the address was and perfect service. And if they could not make that determination and they could not assure themselves that they had service, the plaintiff isn't stuck. The plaintiff has, during that 1 year commencement period, if they can't obtain service, they have the right to voluntarily dismiss the complaint without prejudice. And if they do so before the commencement period expires, then that is an attempt to commence, a failure otherwise than on the merits, and then they can take advantage of the saving statute. The plaintiff at all times is the master of his or her case and can decide if they have service, and if not, they can take appropriate steps to preserve their rights. That did not happen in this case. I hope that answers your question, Justice Donnelly. To go back to, I wanted to finish addressing Justice French's point as well. So under Kossuth, we see this as one of two things are true. Either we have an on-the-merits judgment when the 366th day arrived, or if no complaint was ever commenced, if no case ever existed against Dr. Humphreys, on that 366th day. Anything the plaintiff does after that point, whether it's filing instructions for service, whether it's filing a new complaint, is judged as having been filed as of that date. And so, and whether or not it's timely for statute of limitations purposes is judged by that date of filing, presuming they get service within 1 year after the commencement. So in this case, for example, when the statute of limitations expired on July 6th of 2015, the 1 year commencement expired on July 6th of 2016. So as of July 7th, 2016, if there's no case that was ever filed against Dr. Humphreys and the statute of limitations is expired, when plaintiff files his instruction for service a full 8 months later in March of 2017 and then gets service on Dr. Humphreys, all the plaintiff has is a case that's filed as of March 2nd, a case that's commenced as of March 2nd, 2017, when we have a statute of limitations that's 8 months before that in July of 2016, and the case is time barred.
If the plaintiff had dismissed their case, voluntarily dismissed it on the 364th day without obtaining service, under your reading, would they have an additional year from that day then to refile?
That is correct. That is correct, Your Honor, because while that commencement period is pending, during that 1 year period, the case is considered commenced subject to obtaining service. So we have a commenced case during that time period where the court and or the plaintiff can voluntarily or involuntarily dismiss, and a voluntary dismissal is without prejudice and otherwise on the merits. But that 366 day has meaning. Once that 366 day comes with no without prejudice dismissal before that, then it goes from a case that was pending subject to service being completed to a case that as a matter of law was never pending in the first place.
Don't we really have to overrule Goolsbee to get to your result?
I don't think so, Your Honor, and this is why, Justice DeWine, I don't think you do. Goolsbee was decided. What happened in Goolsbee was within the commencement period.
Well, I understand that, but Goolsbee seemed to announce a pretty clear rule, consequently hold that when service has not been obtained within 1 year of filing a complaint, that subsequent refiling an identical complaint within the rule would provide an additional year within which to obtain service and commence an action under Civil Rule 3A, an instruction to the clerk to attempt service on the complaint will be equivalent to a filing of the complaint. So we hold that. I mean, I think
yes.
I think we'd have to at least say that that's incorrect.
And I've thought about that a lot, Justice DeWine, and and here's why I'm not sure that it has to be overruled. Because the key holding in Goolsbee was if there's a subsequent instruction for service or a subsequent plate filed within rule. And that's the key.
But doesn't rule here, rule here seems to refer to the time within 3A, right?
It could refer to the time in 3A, but importantly in that case, when the complaint at issue was refiled, the statute of limitations had not run. So the court in Goolsbee didn't have to address our exact scenario here, where you have a failure of commencement coupled with the statute of limitations running. In Goolsbee, the plaintiff was always free to refile up to the time that the statute of limitations passed, and it hadn't in that case.
Yeah, I understand we can distinguish the facts. I don't know how you can not say we would have to say our holding in Goolsbee was wrong.
I think it could be that the holding in Goolsbee is limited to its facts. And because we are dealing with a different factual scenario here, I think Goolsbee is still good law and a decision in favoring our position in this case, and Goolsbee can be reconciled on their facts. Thank you, Justice DeWine.
So, counsel, what you're saying is the fact that the statute of limitations had run during that time period, the first year, and no service was made, that doesn't affect the ability to use the saving statute by a dismissal and then a refiling within a year. That's your basic premise here, right?
Yes, as long as we're talking within the one-year commencement period, Chief Justice, I understand your question.
For the saving statute?
Yes, correct.
Yes, even though the statute had run, but they filed it prior to the expiration of the statute, the original action.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
If I'm understanding your question. And I see I'm already into my two-minute rebuttal time, and my colleague has not had his opportunity, so I will step away if there's no further questions from the court.
Then he's going to use your 2 minutes, and you won't have them.
No, understood, Chief Justice. Thank you.
All right. So you're cheated out of a minute, Mr. Schaefer, but feel free.
Justice O'Connor, Greer Schaefer for Mount Carmel Health System. May it please the court and counsel. Mr. Seckler was very eloquent in laying out the fact that this was really an issue of an expiration of the statute of limitations and then a failure to perfect service or commence the case within 1 year thereafter. And I think as practitioners, sometimes we get lost in that, what's that 1 year period under 3A really mean? Is that an extension of the statute of limitations, or is it a grace period, as I believe Justice O'Connor called it in the Seeger case? In any event, he is correct that, and I think we've all been taught, and those who have practiced on the trial bench know, Civil Rule 3A is a simple rule. It's straightforward. It says what it says. It makes no exception for an extension of time beyond that 1 year, as was set forth in Seeger. So what our trial judge did, he looked at the case, he said there was no service, which there wasn't, and appellee agrees with that. There was no service, and there was no dismissal in that 1 year period. That would have triggered the savings statute, and we wouldn't be here. And I think where our practitioners go into the weeds with this sometimes, or our trial courts, is because of decisions that hold the savings statute provides for a dismissal on the merits, or otherwise than on the merits, excuse me. And I don't know how that could be based on what Mr. Seckler just told you based on Kotseth versus Bayer and the Lincoln Theater cases. If the case isn't commenced, there's nothing to save. Very briefly, because I know my time's limited, I will just say that we are involved in this case not on a direct theory of liability, but agency by estoppel, so the hospital would not be liable vicariously if Dr. Humphreys is not saved by the savings statute from plaintiff's claims. In this instance, we've been instructed in the brief that there is no question about a failure to timely serve within the 1 year, so frankly, we should be dismissed from this matter in any event, unless the court finds that the savings statute somehow would apply. But to conclude, I would ask that the court rule on this conflict issue and find in favor of what we have set forth in our arguments. And it would be based on a long line of cases that came from this court, the clarity of the Civil Rule 3A, and the fact that this court has primacy in its procedural rules over any procedural statutory rules that the court may encounter. And I see that my time is up, but thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schroyer.
Thank you. May it please the court. Under the Supreme Court ruling in Thomas versus Freeman, it specifically said that if an action fails due to lack of service, that is a dismissal other than on the merits. That's, I think the Thomas versus Freeman 1997 Supreme Court case is a pivotal issue in this matter. It specifically said where a case is dismissed because the court did not have jurisdiction, where service has not been perfected, the dismissal is always otherwise than on the merits. And then—
But that can't really be the case, right? I'm over here, I'm sorry. The microphones are hard. But I mean, obviously, there's situations where the statute of limitations is clearly run, service hasn't been obtained, the case is dismissed, it can't be refiled, right?
Under Freeman, if the case is dismissed for lack of service after a year, it's a dismissal other on the merits. Then you have to look, do I have an opportunity to refile the case? That's controlled by the savings statute that takes over after 3A has played out. And in order to use the savings statute, there's two things that have to occur. The case had to have been dismissed other than on the merits, which is exactly what the Supreme Court in Freeman says. And then you have to show that in the first attempt under 3A, you had made an attempt to commence service. And so those are the two requirements that need to be made. And that's exactly what the appellate court in this case found in this case, and that's what Shanahorn in the 10th District also holds for. So the saving statute applies after there's a failure under 3A. Then you go to, can the saving statute apply? You need two things. Was it dismissed other than on merits, controlled by Freeman, and was there an attempt to commence service? The attempt to commence service is controlled specifically by the Supreme Court in Leneve. Leneve specifically said that they attempted to get service. However, they were trying to get service by certified mail, and they had to do personal service. So the Supreme Court in Leneve said that is an attempt, but it wasn't a proper attempt, so it didn't preserve and give you the right to the saving statute. So we have Leneve that covers the commencement issue. I would point out also under Rule 3A, it says a case is commenced if a defendant is served. In this case, two defendants were served, COA and Mount Carmel. And there was an attempt under 3A to serve by the service of the certified mail at his former employee's office. Now, the question.
So when 3A says 1 year, it really means 2 years, is that right?
No. I think 3A is a hard statute. It's a hard rule. If you don't have service within 1 year, the case is dismissed. You only then get the benefit of the savings statute if it was dismissed otherwise on the merits, controlled by Freeman, and there was an attempt
to commence. Doesn't that mean, but so that means that although the rule says you have 1 year to obtain service, you always have 2 years, at least 2 years?
If you have made an attempt and you timely refile the case within a year of the within a year, yes. But it's not an extension of 3A. It's two statutes, or it's a rule that gives you a year, and then after the year goes by, then you've got a statute that can give you a saving statute.
Counsel, even if we agree with you, mm-hmm. Why was this case dismissed and refiled?
Well, it was what happened is the 1 year went by, and then it came to the attention when the motion for summary judgment was filed, hey, you do not have service. And that was about 4 or 5 months into the after the 1 year. So then we filed the mechanism set forth in both Goolsbee and Sisk to file a precipice and service. That acts, according to both Sisk and Goolsbee, as a immediate dismissal and refiling. So that was basically the use of the saving statute at that point.
What if we decide that Goolsbee and Sisk probably need revisiting? What's your argument outside of those cases to say that that kind of a filing is the same as a dismissal and refiling?
Well, other than we looked at this when we decided what to do. Do you do a dismissal and a refile? So we followed Goolsbee and Sisk, which specifically said, Sisk says an instruction of the clerk to attempt service outside the 1 year 3A is equivalent to a refiling of the complaint. So we filed that in. And when Goolsbee first came up with the rule, followed by Sisk later, they said, look, this is procedural. We're not going to make you go through the extra steps of doing a dismissal and refiling when it's the exact same complaint. We're not going to require that. So that's a technical issue. And then when you apply the rules to be liberally construed, that fits right in with what Goolsbee and Sisk said. So we did follow exactly what they said. I think Goolsbee and Sisk have a lot to do with it, that we follow that procedure in place on how to refile the case. And I would point out that the court in Thomas did say that the plaintiff has suffered a penalty by doing this. What they've done is they've used up their voluntary dismissal. They can never voluntarily dismiss the case again for any reason. An expert doesn't show up, too bad. You can't dismiss your case for any reason. So there's a penalty associated with that. I thought the 10th District in the concurring opinion set out exactly what we look at, and it's as simple as 1, 2, 3. It's one, the initial action must have been filed within the statute of limitations. Two, the action must have been commenced or attempted to be commenced under Rule 3A, which it was in this case. And three, the action must have failed otherwise than upon the merits after the expiration of the statute of limitations, and that's what happened with regards and set forth in the Freeman case. So we have, when I looked at the cases from the Supreme Court point of view, other than on the merits is controlled by Thomas. Attempt to commence is controlled by the Supreme Court decision in Leneve. And the mechanism to do that is controlled by the Supreme Court case in Goolsbee and Sisk. I think to do what the other side is asking to be done in this case would require overruling Thomas, Leneve, Goolsbee, and Sisk. I think the Supreme Court has, in these four cases, told us what needs to be done, and there's only a few courts that applied all four of those decisions. One of them was this 10th District Court of Opinion and Shanahorn, and it's interesting, the cases that have applied all four of these decisions consistently rule that you do have the saving statute if these prerequisites are followed. I would point out just quickly in summary, the 10th District Court of Appeals did not rule on the issue of whether or not Dr. Humphreys was an employee of COA. We do have a case pending against COA. If the court disagrees with the appellate court, this case would have to be remanded to the Court of Appeals for the issue on that issue of the employment relationship between COA and Dr. Humphreys, because they are a served party in this case. And if he is an employee of COA at the time, the case would continue against COA and against Mount Carmel Hospital. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor. Appellee's main points were that Thomas versus Freeman supports their position because it says that the instructions for service is the equivalent of a refiling, even if they happen outside the Rule 3A one-year period. The key difference between Thomas versus Freeman is in this case is when the dismissal in Thomas versus Freeman was by the court during the one-year commencement period. And even if we do assume that instructions for service are the equivalent to a refiling as they were in Thomas, in this case, that equivalent refiling was on March 2nd, 2017, 8 months after the statute of limitations had run. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you call the recess?
All rise.